Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC Studios, it's Brian Lehrer, a daily politics podcast. It's Wednesday, May 18th. In President Biden's speech in Buffalo yesterday, he used the T word.
What happened here is simple and straightforward. Terrorism. Terrorism. Domestic terrorism.
President Biden also used the P word, power.
Violence inflicted in the service of hate and the vicious thirst for power that defines one group of people being inherently inferior to any other group.
So the P word and the H word, hate, but he also used the A words, angry and alienated.
A hate that through the media and politics, the internet, has radicalized, angry, alienated, lost, and isolated individuals into falsely believing that they will be replaced, that's the word, replaced by the other, by people who don't look like them.
And he came back to the P word, in fact, two P words.
We have to refuse to live in a country where fear and lies are packaged for power and for profit.
President Biden in Buffalo yesterday. With me now is Brian Levin, director of the Center for the Study of Hate and Extremism at California State University in San Bernardino. He was previously with the Southern Poverty Law Center's Klan Watch and Militia Task Force and a New York City police officer back in the 1980s. Professor Levin, thanks for coming on again. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you. With a resume like that, someone everyone can hate.
There you go. And we're going to get into those different little bites of President Biden that I picked out, because I think each of them, you know, could launch a whole conversation. But first, where does the Buffalo mass murder fit into the arc of hate crimes in the United States as you study that arc right now? Racist killings of Black Americans are not all that new, obviously not at all new. But is there something very 2022 about this one, or not so much?
Oh, gosh, what a great question. And the data bears it out. Let me try and roll it out to you as quickly as I can. 2019 was a record year for FBI enumerated hate crime. There's all kinds of issues with how they count them, but it was a record for them. And it would have been a record even without the massacre in El Paso. So let's look macro, going back a little longer, right? Replacement theory, even before it got named that, has been around for decades and decades and decades in various incarnations here in the United States, and then germinated in France and Germany and elsewhere. What we had since about a decade ago were these string of manifesto killings, starting in Norway, and then we saw New Zealand, Charleston, South Carolina, you get the idea, El Paso. And we had a really interesting thing, just bear with me. In 2020, hate crimes, for instance, in New York City dropped, but the rest of the country was up. And the reason was anti-Semitic cases declined because of the gathering restrictions that took place. And we saw that, like, you know, Jews are twice as represented in major cities, and New York especially has the largest population of Jews of any in the country. So we had this interesting little kind of pause and realignment during 2020. So anti-Semitic went down, but in 2019, Jews were the top target in New York, LA, and Chicago. So what happened? We saw a carouseling of a bit of a realignment. First anti-Asian in March and April, and then particularly, listen to this, June 2020, we saw a bunch of stuff going on. First, we had this crescendo going from the Liberate movement, which started on April 17th, of folks showing up places armed. Okay, and then we saw, you know, they were going to state capitol.
That was the anti-lockdown movement at that time, right?
Absolutely. And it took off on Facebook like crazy. We stopped counting because we had a staff intermission with regard to like our researchers and interns. So I stopped counting at over 200 of these liberate groups. And that kind of like laid the fertile ground for the insurrection, people will say, but it also laid the fertile ground for this kind of anti-black stuff that occurred. So just bear with me. We saw these civil guards, and certainly, you know, Kenosha, I think, was an example of how that can spin out of control. But in June 2020, we saw the largest number of social justice protests that we saw in recent decades. And there, by the way, there were some violent ones, but our colleagues at Princeton found over 94% were peaceful. And if you look at the leadership, they weren't talking about conspiracy theories and eliminationist doctrine, which labeled people who disagree with them as targets for violence and death. So what I'm saying is, yes, there were violent folks who were on the edges. But if you look at Sharpton, you look at Ben Crump, look at the Get Your Knee Off Our Necks rally, it was very conciliatory with respect to nonviolence and police. Go look at it, folks. I'll try and find it. I'm at Prof. Levin on Twitter. I'll put it up there since we can't do it on the show. The bottom line was we saw this visceral response that went from liberate, this elastic pool of grievance online, right? This elastic pool of grievance online translated into real world stuff. So as these increases in rallies occurred across the country, and they were very widespread, not just in big cities like New York, but in mid-sized cities and even small towns. What we saw was an expansion in the number of police departments that actually were able to identify at least one hate crime in their jurisdiction. So a multi-year high on that. But here's what else we saw. Here's the big one. June 2020 was the worst month for anti-black hate crime ever, going back to 91 when FBI started getting national stats. And that elevation, just listen to this, that elevation in anti-black hate crime, unlike previous spikes around like election 2016 or even 9/11, lasted months and months and months. So the spike, that month was the second worst month for hate crime overall, according to FBI data that we disaggregated. But that elevation, that spike, went on for months. We have not seen that before. So that was historic. And
would you call that, if we're going to label that, would you call that a backlash? I used all those letters for Biden's language. Maybe this is the B word, backlash to the outburst of protests after the George Floyd killing.
Absolutely. And by the way, there was over $1 billion in damage in some of the more violent ones. But what I'm saying to you is the leadership, Sharpton and Crump, specifically spoke out against it. And most of the killings were against black folks. And like here in California, we had a white supremacist run over a protester. So, let's look at it that way. But yes, there are some on the left who are violent, but they're violent in a different way.
No, I think I was asking a different question than you answered. The backlash is against the protests, even the peaceful ones that were taking place after the killing of George Floyd. But let me move on from that.
Yeah,
to
but
President...
can I make one quick point on that? Listen to this.
Please.
Remember Lafayette Park? Right. And we saw this constant stream of videos on certain broadcast networks and elsewhere. BLM Antifa socialists, busloads and plane loads of Antifa coming to a town near you. The day of Lafayette Park that was cleared out of peaceful protesters, that was one of the five worst days ever for anti-black hate crime. So, yes, it was a backlash and there was a sticky internet and broadcast segment to this that kept that fear going for months and months and months. And it was used politically. So first blacks were burning down our towns along with socialist Antifa and all that. Then they were involved in stealing the election. And now they're involved with stealing our children with respect to their schools.
Right.
And even
and
this
those,
kind of pedophile stuff
the,
against Justice
the
Jackson.
Conspiracy theories. And how about yes. President Biden's P words, power and profit? Those are different than hate. How much do you see motivations and power of power or profit behind people pushing a belief in white supremacy today?
Hey, great point. Let's look at this. When candidate Trump put his Muslim ban proposal out there 5 days after our community in San Bernardino was attacked, mm-hmm. his polls, Fox polls, by the way, showed him in the battleground state of South Carolina getting a 25% bump in just the days after that. And we also saw a 23% increase after the Muslim ban proposal in anti-Muslim hate crimes above the pop that we had from the terror attack. Now, about profit, I was on the air on Fox News Channel during the social justice protests, and I criticized Tucker Carlson using deceptive stats with regard to African-Americans. You know what? Never got called back on there again, but his ratings continued to climb. So there's a currency to this because, let me just say why. Because the same kind of emotional, visceral response that we have to fear that can get people to be violent can also get people to come out to vote. Look, fear has been a part of politics for some time. But what I think is so terrible is the stickiness and the intertwining of the internet where you see this echo chamber where both kind of complement each other. And then we see this heightened elevation of hate crime on the streets. There's a correlation between invective online and violence in the street. And the one shoe that didn't drop was the mass killings until now. But we knew that steam was going to go somewhere as people were online more and getting radicalized more, particularly with regard to this trading of memes and conspiracy theories. So one person, like, for instance, this terrorist may never have seen Tucker Carlson, but the memes and the lies and the conspiracy theories, as well as the eliminationist rhetoric. And we don't see that on the left. We don't see the homicides. We don't see the glorification of heavy weaponry that we see on the hard right.
So this conspiracy theory called replacement theory is gaining traction in some parts of white America. That's been getting a lot of press attention since the shooting in Buffalo. Can you explain this conspiracy theory for people who have only heard the term and only vaguely know what it is or where it came from?
Sure. We're experiencing demographic change, not only in the United States, but elsewhere. Last decade, we became a minority white Anglo Christian country. And what has happened with that, this went from, for instance, the extreme. Everyone knows that we have demographic change going on, but now it's a conspiracy with Soros and Antifa and BLM. So what we have is this elastic pool of grievance, and it's fertilized by fear, and then this eliminationist doctrine knocks it another ratchet up. And so with regard to replacement theory, what it says is not only is there demographic change going on, but the people that are coming in are destroying the country in many different ways. And oh, by the way, leftists, socialists, Democrats, Antifa, Jews, Soros, they're all responsible for it. And that's what happened with the Tree of Life massacre. I don't even want to say his name. But he said, screw the optics. And he went after Jews. Why? Because they were part of this kind of Soros conspiracy to let in the caravan of immigrants. One quick thing, though. Listen to this. Usually in election years, we see hate crimes rise later in the year. And we saw that in 2018, for instance, right? And November 2016, two worst months of the last decade. Now we're seeing fire season all year long. And that's something that I'm concerned about. Hate crime so far in 2022, 16 major cities, including New York, up an average of 24%. And that's on top of an increase in 2021 and 2020.
So the population is actually changing. We all know that. The difference between what's real and what's conspiracy theory is the belief that someone is directing the population change for political gain.
Yes, two-part, that it's being nefariously organized by a cadre of enemies. And number two, that these immigrants that are coming in, which, by the way, like, thank God, because if you look at, like, for instance, in my little area, PhDs and researchers, but also the students of the children of immigrants who go to our school, they're doing beautifully. But what the other shoe on that conspiracy theory walk is that these immigrants are dirty, they're violent, they can't assimilate in any way, and they are alien to our culture, and it's part of an invasion that must be eliminated. So there's a whole, it's not only that someone's controlling it, but these people are violent, and we have to stand up against it. And you can hear it on Tucker Carlson all the time.
Here's a clip that some of you will have heard this morning, listeners, from a report by NPR's Mara Liasson on Morning Edition today about the CPAC annual conservative conference being set this year for the country of Hungary because they admire their increasingly autocratic leader, Viktor Orban. Here's Mara.
So there are more and more conservatives who say, as Peter Thiel, one of the biggest donors now in the Republican Party, who said, democracy and freedom are not compatible. There are people who are questioning small L liberalism on the right. Small L liberalism meaning democracy with checks and balances, free press, independent judiciary, tolerance for diversity of backgrounds and opinions. So I think that the things that Orban has done to many people look undemocratic, but to a lot of conservatives, they look like the only way to save their way of life.
Whoa. Mara Liasson on Morning Edition today. Brian, have you heard that before? People saying out loud, democracy and freedom are not compatible as they identify with this sort of white Christian identity right wing?
Yes, but here's the thing that I think is so interesting. Prejudice has both depth, direction, and also an informational component. So you have different strata. You have some folks that say, no, you know, I don't want to change things so much, but, you know, blacks did steal the election. Or, you know, and then it becomes a rabbit hole. And what I'm saying to you is, when you look at the polls that say white people are under attack, even before the pandemic, it was up around 40, you know, with a 40%. So what I'm saying to you is, this fear is being stoked. But it's not like when I'm at, just bear with me. I was at the ball game and I'm looking at the box scores and I'm kind of quiet. And the people next to me were clapping when there was a hit. So what I'm saying to you is, we have both a deliberative type of prejudice, but also a visceral one. And you don't have to have all your ducks in a row fact-wise, as long as feeling and image-wise. That's why with this teenage terrorist, memes were a large part of his, you know, the kind of 21st century bumper stickers were part of it. Peter Thiel, interesting enough, he was in my law school class and I knew him back then. Huh. You know, listen to his anti-democratic stuff for a while, you know, and we lionize money in this culture, right? And by the way, Peter's invited to my university anytime if he wants to have a discussion. But for some time, he was saying that America was at a competitive disadvantage because we gave women suffrage and their vote was like bleeding heart vote that would spend too much of government funds. That's why we needed pods in the ocean, these kind of like without governance. And he backtracked on the anti-woman suffrage thing. But like when you put that along with eliminationist language, bust their skulls, like President Trump said, or just this weekend, for instance, Ted Nugent, who knew that guy was still around, saying, bust the heads of Democrats. There is something different. And people call me all the time saying, what about the left? What about the left? Yeah, we've seen violence from the left. But generally, the left believes in, like the social justice protests, they were about changing laws. They weren't about destroying the whole country. Although, yes, were there some slackers on that did? Probably. But when we look at on the hard far right and white supremacists, there's a whole ecosystem of eliminationist doctrine, kill them, and that these folks, whoever they are in this constellation, this elastic pool of grievance, they're all related. So it's Newsom out here in California, Governor Newsom, Antifa, BLM, they're all enemies. And they all are existential threats that must be eliminated. That's the kind of language that we're getting. Yeah. On the left, it's like a lot of hacking and insulting. And by the way, I've gone to these conflictual protests. A lot of times what the left will do is they'll direct violence to a particular target and then have fisticuffs and meant it humiliating them and getting them out of town as opposed to necessarily killing them. Since 2018, white supremacists, far right, have dominated the extremist homicides, according to our research here in the United States, and for some time before that as well.
By the way, on the Peter Thiel, women's suffrage is making us soft. He can backtrack, but he can't unsay it. So we know what was going on spontaneously in his brain. And also, that's one of the reasons that they like Viktor Orban, because like Putin, they've got this toxic masculinity, you know, totally. Male supremacy, not just white supremacy, also male supremacy thing going on and traditional sex roles.
Yes, and that is it. Thank you so much. Oh, I love doing your show, Brian. Call anytime. There are so many tentacles to this. You are right. We have a separate incel movement, but nevertheless, this kind of toxic masculinity, another, just bear with me. White males are losing power. And one of the ways that we're doing this is from these, what did Rush Limbaugh used to call them? Feminazis. What do we do with Nazis? We destroy them. What does Putin say about Ukraine? They're Nazis. So you see the kind of eliminationist language. These folks who are the enemies represent an existential threat who must be destroyed. And toxic masculinity, as well as weapons, the weaponization fetish, is out there too.
And we have to leave it there with Brian Levin, director of the Center for the Study of Hate and Extremism at California State University in San Bernardino. He was previously with the Southern Poverty Law Center's Klan Watch and Militia Task Force and a New York City police officer in the 1980s. Brian, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.